Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome to Fitstairs World of Sport in association with Boodles. Check them out at boodles.com. It's episode 13. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Adrian Clark. And coming up on today's show, England versus India is beautifully poised at one apiece heading into the Lord's Test. But after their mauling at Edgbaston...
The first time India has beaten England at Edgbaston. And it's by a massive margin. They win by 337 runs.
Is it right that Ben Stokes' side are still odds on to win the series? With Rory and Scotty Scheffler super short once again, do all roads lead to improving John Rahm for proper value in this year's Open Championship? And don't miss our fourfold ACCA choices ahead of a fab fortnight of sporting action. Blimey, there's so much top-class action happening across the next couple of weeks, and we'll do our very best to be right across it for you today. If you're over 18 and love your sport like we do, brilliant. It's great to have your company. Sports betting is also at the heart of what we do. And on that subject, we've got a pretty straightforward mantra. Never gamble more than you can shrug off losing if you accidentally put your wallet in the washing machine. Remember, 18 plus, please play responsibly and check out GambleAware.com. Right, let's introduce today's panel. Let's start with the good news, shall we? Lola Katz-Roberts is with us. Hello, Lola.
Thanks, Clarky. Yeah. Very happy to be here, as always.
Great stuff. And in other news,
here honestly,
is Henry Beasley is here as well. Look, we sent you guys to Wimbledon last week to interview John Inverdale. Terrific job, I've got to say, the pair of you. Well done. But I noticed that you were in a random pub rather than in the All England club. I mean, what was the issue here? Did they not let you in? Was it a riff-raff thing? I mean, come on, spill the
beans. We did say, we said Wimbledon. We never specified that it would be at the All England club. I'm not even sure if we had an SW19 postcode. But yeah, they wouldn't let Henry in because they said he hadn't fulfilled his potential on the grass.
Love it. But it was good. It was good.
Yeah, you really good. Yeah, John was a top man as well. Top class.
Absolutely. Right, let's kick off today's episode by talking cricket, shall we? Please delete all references to last week's episode where Ian McIntosh and I pretty much laughed off a brumless India's hopes of taking English wickets, or 20 of them at least. Akash Deep stepped up on that score, as did, of course, the captain, Shubman Gill, who scored a frankly ridiculous 430 runs in Birmingham. It is one apiece heading into the Lord's Test, where the odds are as follows. England are 5-6 favourites. That's 1.83. India 7-5, 2.4. And the draw is 15-2. Henry, does that feel right to you? Because there's an argument that India should be the favourites here.
I think, yeah, coming off an absolute mauling like we've just seen at Edgbaston, I'm quite surprised perhaps to see England be odds on to win the next test. I think there's a lot of questions, aren't there, that we've got to answer here as well. How are we going to get Shubman Gill out is one of them. Bumrah's obviously come back into the fold as well. I mean, we struggled, obviously, without him at Edgbaston. So how are we going to deal with that? And I think there are still a lot of questions to answer, aren't there, over England's bowling attack? I mean, when Yaz was on a couple of weeks ago, we said that was going to be the big question. And, yeah, it's proving to be so far.
Yeah. Is England's bowling the major concern for you, Lola?
Well, it's funny because it's a little bit chicken and egg, really. Yeah. You know, obviously the bowlers did struggle at Edgbaston. Subcontinental wicket, as Ben Stokes described it after the game. England batted 90 overs in the first innings and 68 in the second. So no wonder the bowlers were struggling. They were exhausted,
yeah,
spending all day out in the field, all day bowling. There was only one day of the test where they weren't bowling. Mm. So my feeling is that it's actually the batsmen really putting the pressure on the bowling attack. Because if you're not
able to... They've got to set the game up for the bowlers a bit better, haven't they?
Right. So I'm going to ask you this question. England win the toss at Lord's. We don't know what the wicket's going to be like.
Yeah.
Should they choose to bowl or bat? Say it's one of those wickets that's even in terms of what you do. Should they bat or bowl? Because I think there's an argument to say that we got lucky in the first test.
Yeah.
In the second test, the decision would prove to be horrendously wrong. And as Lola rightly points out, India then took complete control of the game, wore our players out physically and mentally. So by the time they came into bat, they had not a lot left to give.
Yeah. It's tough, isn't it? I mean, the early pictures I've seen on Twitter and stuff look like it's going to be a bit of a green seamer. So we might bowl, who knows? But I think England obviously have this attitude, don't they, of we'll chase. You know, we won't bowl first, we'll chase, because they're happy chasing these huge totals in the fourth innings. But it doesn't happen very often, does it? You know, when you're able to chase down sort of 350 plus, and we obviously saw it at Headingley in the first test. But yeah, I'd be surprised if Stokes wins the toss again and chooses to bowl, particularly given the weather that's forecast.
Yeah. I really want to see us bowl. It's a bit selfish, really, because I'm going to be there. And I just want to see Jofra Archer. Like, he could be the X factor. Putting concerns about his fitness and durability to side for just a moment, he's by far the most exciting bowler in
England. I think the prep for him is a bit odd, though, because he obviously didn't play for Sussex, did he, last week, and was with...
Shouldn't he have had two matches rather than one?
Yeah, I think it's a bit strange. I mean, I think I heard Michael Vaughan saying the other day, a test match bowler can run up to 30 kilometres a day if they're running in.
Can they?
They can run up to 30 kilometres a day. Like Lola says, the guy's played one day of sort of first class county championship cricket in 4 years. I think it's going to be a huge ask to just expect him to come in and knock everyone over, especially the form that some of the Indian batsmen are in.
But then you think early doors, if he comes in, I mean, some people say that the only time the wicket's going to do anything is in the first session. I don't really know enough about that specifically, but I feel like if you get him in early, the crowd's up. Like, these are more intangibles.
The World Test Championship final between Australia and South Africa was a low-scoring match, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So with that in mind, I suppose maybe bowling is a good idea. On selection, so we agreed that Jofra Archer has to come in because our bowlers are knackered, right? Yeah.
Just gives, like you say, gives us something different.
Okay. Is Cass knackered? Is Josh Chung absolutely, you know, blown out?
Well, I feel like with Cass and Tung, when you go back to historically England's bowling attack, you look at Jimmy and you look at Broadie. With them, not only did they have the ability to put the ball down in the same place consistently, you know, it was also about how they felt in themselves, you know, that they were always confident they were going to be able to make something happen because they had the track record to prove they were going to do it. Mm. And I think it's harsh on Cass and Tung. They're relatively lightly raced. Mm. But Cass, really, for me, watching his body language in the last match, he looked like, you know, like he had the weight of the world on his shoulders, and that he didn't really believe in his own ability to make a breakthrough. So I personally think they should take him out the firing line. We all know about the stuff with his toe.
I think both should come out for another reason, and that reason is Shubman Gill, who now knows, through being at the crease for pretty much the whole series so far, he knows our bowlers inside out. He knows how quick they are. He knows their little tricks.
He knows
how they move the
ball.
They
don't think they can get him out either, I think, is the other thing.
Exactly. He knows he's demoralised these guys. Let's just have a whole new attack.
We also are probably... I mean, we're talking about the seamers here and the pace bowlers, but we probably do have to talk about the spinner as well, don't we?
You're not a fan, are you?
I just think... I mean, he's 21. Don't want to be too harsh, but he's not had a brilliant series so far, has he? I think his figures in the Edgbaston test, what did he take? 5 for 286.
Most expensive for England since 1950.
Yeah, these are pretty unwanted records. And I think he's taken 8 wickets, Bashir, in the series, and 6 of those have been caught in the deep. I don't know. It's a strange one. Bashir's not getting a game for his county, you know, as we've talked about before.
How can that work? How can he not get any club team?
They've picked him on potential, haven't they, though, I think? And it's obviously just not happening for him at the moment.
The big issue with Bashir is if he's not contributing a lot with the ball, he's certainly not contributing much in the field, and he can't contribute anything with the bat. Mm. So you are really carrying a passenger if he's not playing well. And then I really struggle with Bashir to imagine how it's going to work for him in Australia in the Ashes this winter.
I think he's just so expensive, though, isn't he? I think, and that just takes all the pressure off at the other end. I mean, look, he's got no test spinner has bowled as many overs as Bashir and has a higher economy rate. I mean, he's going at 3.8 an over, having bowled nearly 680.
You lot are ruthless. You're second half of the team.
I don't want to go into TV.
And as Henry says, the potential is astronomical, but at the moment where England are at, we're not in a position where we're, you know, really building long-term future. We've got to win this series, and then we've got to go to Australia. Well, so
have we got to win this series? Now I'm gonna play a little bit of devil's advocate here and say that are we taking things a bit too seriously in terms of results, because this England team are delivering a brand of cricket, win, lose or draw, that in my opinion is saving Test cricket. They are fun. And I didn't sense unrest really among the fans at Edgbaston. It was like, okay, we've got beat, but we've got beat trying.
Yeah.
And as an England cricket fan myself, I want us to win, but above all else, I want to watch Ben Stokes' style of cricket. I want to watch that brave, bold, adventurous.
There was never a question, was there, of playing out for the draw Edgbaston last week, but I know what you're saying, but I think if we do, let's say thinking ahead, if we were to go down to Australia again and get knocked over 4-0 or 4-1 or something, I think then it would be like, actually, lads, come on, you know, winning games first and foremost. And that's always been the mantra, hasn't it? Mm. Entertain, but, you know, winning games is first and foremost.
You've got to look at the decision-making of Stokes over the series. Okay. I think he got quite lucky in the first test with the decision to bowl first. And sometimes I feel that with that ego of the run chase, that's the only way England can win. Okay. And I think with Stokes particularly, you know, he hasn't had a century for 2 years since the Ashes.
So you're dropping him as well?
No, I just feel with Stokes, the frustration is he's your captain. Sometimes you want him to come in and steady the ship, and then he kind of wafts at something and gets out for 23. And looks really, really shocked. And it's like, Ben, I don't know why.
But he's been one of Britain's greatest sportsmen of the last 10 years.
He has so much credit in the bank, doesn't he? I think he's just slightly concerned. Lola touched on it there. I think for all the sort of scrutiny that the likes of Pope and Crawley have had, and justifiably so. Mm. There's only one batsman in England's top six over the past 2 years that doesn't average over 30.
So you're getting rid of him as well?
No, I've said I'm not at all. Not at all. Obviously, what he adds as captain, he's probably been England's most dangerous bowler as well, I could say.
Yeah, definitely.
In the past couple of tests, which is maybe even an issue in itself. But yeah, it's a slight worry. We'd like to see him make some runs, wouldn't we, at Lord's?
Well, let's talk about runs and who's not making them. Zach Crawley is probably the place to start.
Yeah.
He did get that big ton, didn't he, at Trent Bridge against Zimbabwe, but that looks a little bit of an outlier, doesn't it, at the moment. Should England dispose of him now after this test? If he fails again, should Bethel come in and maybe open the batting?
Disposing of him feels like a really hard
thing. It feels a bit harsh, yeah.
And I know it's looking like I'm being really negative overall. I'll come back to that. But I think with Crawley, the issue is with your openers, they're there to get you in, to hold things down for a while. And putting this out to you guys, do you ever really feel secure when Crawley's at the crease?
Yeah, I mean, I think, to be fair, what did he make? 60-odd in the first?
Yeah, the first innings of the first.
Yeah, and test. Looked absolutely unbelievable. Yeah. And I think this is the problem, isn't it? He looked great, and then Edgbaston sort of plays a couple of loose shots, nicks off for not many in both innings. It's like, that's the best and worst of Zach Crawley almost in two tests we've seen. But I think the selectors seem pretty happy to stick by him. They've been very loyal to him, haven't they?
I like watching him. I think he's
on form. When he's on song, he is brilliant. And I don't know. I thought it was interesting what Yad said a couple of weeks ago too, when he came on about England selectors and the leadership group are preparing for Jacob Bethel to be playing in Australia. Yeah. It's like, where is he going to play? These guys have almost got to like play themselves out of contention to make room for.
I'm not having this from the England selectors. If they think Jacob Bethel's going to play in Australia, why isn't he playing now?
I'm with you.
Going back to what you said, though, do they actually care that much about this series, or they're just always putting everything into the Ashes, aren't they?
match practice. Yeah. You know, practice against a good opposition, world-class bowlers.
Yeah.
The issue with Bethel is, where do you put him? Do you put him instead of Pope, or do you put him instead of Zach Crawley at the top of the order? Because he'd be he'd be a fun opener as well.
Yeah. I know, and also I think they like Crawley and Duckett as a left-hand, right-hand combo to start things off, don't they? I think is another thing. Mm. Obviously, Bethel and Duckett would be both left-handers. I think you obviously mentioned Ollie Pope there. Should we move on and talk about Ollie Pope? I mean, like Lady says, we're not trying to sound too negative because it's been two brilliant test matches to watch. But yeah, he's another one, isn't he? It's the feast or famine with Ollie Pope that can be quite frustrating, I think, to watch as a fan.
If he gets past the first 20 balls, he's great, isn't he? I'll read just some of the rankings. Joe Root is the number one test batsman in the world at the moment. Harry Brook is second.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've got two of the very, very best there. Duckett is eighth and Pope is 20th. India only have two in the top 20. Gill, unbelievably, isn't in there, but he will be soon enough if he keeps this up. But Jaiswal and Pan to fourth and sixth. So Pope, actually, he's regarded as a pretty elite batter.
Yeah.
Should we really be biffing him off?
I think it is just, like I said earlier, it's the feast or famine thing with him, isn't it? When it's either brilliant or it's not many. And unfortunately, the not many seem to come after, you know, we've lost an early opener and is back against the wall. I mean, again, the selectors really like him. He's a vice captain, I think, isn't he, as well? They really like him.
He's an Arsenal fan as well.
I knew that was something wrong.
I think the bigger problem is, you know, it's about the approach. If Crawley and Duckett, if they've gone cheaply, you need Ollie Pope to come in and steady the ship. And the problem is, either they all seem to play well, although in this case, obviously, Jamie Smith and Harry Brook had that unbelievable partnership. But either they all play well or it's a complete disaster. Yeah. And that's kind of the whole thing with Bazball. When we get beat really badly. You know, we don't draw games. They had the opportunity to draw the game. Mm. They had the rain in the morning.
It's not the way they want to do it.
But
though,
I think they just need to rather
just sit there all day and watch England grind out 230 runs for three?
England not to get beat and to win things. I want England to go to Australia and, you know, put a marker down. I don't want there to be a whitewash.
I think look, it's proven we've won more than we've lost.
Yeah.
We're not great at Lords. In the last 6 years, right, England have played 10 tests and we've won five.
Mm.
Only five. So only half of the tests at Lords in the last 6 years. They were against Ireland twice. New Zealand, decent side. West Indies and Sri Lanka, not great side.
Not great, yeah.
We lost to Australia, South Africa and India. We drew with the Aussies and we drew with the Kiwis as well. It is our least successful ground this decade. Are the odds wrong? Do you think, Lola, I know you're going on day one?
It's a tough one. I'm looking at it more as, I think it was a good wake-up call for England, what happened at Edgbaston. I think the way the match played out at Headingley, having the miraculous run chase, probably fueled that idea that they can just set up and do the same thing, and that it doesn't matter if they're losing on the final day, that they can pull it out the fire. So I think it's a good reality check. I think man for man, I hope this isn't a massively controversial thing to say, but man for man, I think England have the better players. They have the superior squad depth. So no, I don't think the odds are wrong. And yeah, I think that Edgbaston heavy defeat, if they didn't come out super locked in, super motivated, I'd be very surprised.
Joe Root is 18-5, which is 4.6 in decimal terms, to score 100 in the first innings. Well, he hasn't been great so far, has he? No. Is that a selection you'd be on board with?
Jeez.
I wouldn't be getting rid of Joe Root, no.
No, but I'm not saying that.
I was going to say, you've probably done enough, haven't you, Joe Root?
Do you fancy him to score 100 is the question I'm asking you. I'm not asking him to be dropped. He's due a knock,
that's the thing. Mm. That is the thing. When he's due one, he quite often delivers. So 18-5. What price is Shubman Gill to score 100?
Shubman Gill to score 100.
To score 50 in the first innings, what? He's 2.6 there, so 8-5. And I think,
so to score, repeat that. So to score a 50, and this is the guy that keeps scoring hundreds.
I mean, he's scored 260 and 150 or something in the game.
So his odds against.
He's 8-5 to score a first innings 50, yeah.
That sounds like value.
Quite like that. But look, England's new look attack of Archer, Atkinson, Cook, etc.
Well, hopefully we show him something different. But he has just proved over the past two test matches that he is just... I mean, let's not forget, there was a lot of pressure on him coming in here as well. First game as captain. I think being the captain of the Indian test match team is up there with one of the most... one of the toughest jobs in sport. And yeah, he's obviously answered all of those calls impeccably, and he's got it all, hasn't he?
Yeah, before we move on, Let's end on a positive. Jamie Smith, unbelievable.
Yeah.
What do we do with him? Do you absolutely leave it as it is, as in he's the wicket keeper and he bats at seven, Adam Gilchrist style? Or are you tempted to think, well, he's brilliant, let's get him a bit higher up the order? What's our take on that?
For now, I'd be leaving him exactly where he is, where he's been doing really well. But long term, with the question, you know, we've just raised a ton of questions about the top of the order, I think you'd be looking to move him.
I actually disagree. I think he has plenty of balance, doesn't he? I think coming in,
it's quite nice to have someone, when you're struggling, it's quite nice to have someone
very
really strong.
You go down, I mean, you go down the order, you've got Stokes coming in, you've got Harry Brook five, Stokes coming in at six, Smith coming in at seven. It's a very, very good sort of lower middle order. So he's staying at seven for me.
Where's your money then? England, India, the draw? What are you saying, Henry?
Well, I'm definitely going to back Shubman Gill to get 50 or more in the first innings. Yeah, I'm backing the bounce back here. I think England will win. I think 5-6 is probably a bit skinny. If we do bowl first and they get off to a flyer, obviously you'll get a bigger price than that. So might sit and wait, but yeah, I think England will get the job done.
I'm going with the Lord's issues. I'm going India here, odds against. You get the casting vote here, Lola.
I'm going England. I'm being patriotic for once. Yeah. I think we're gonna bounce back. Archer's gonna come steaming out the traps, and I'm gonna see a brilliant day of cricket.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Welcome back. If you'd like to place a bet on the cricket or any sport discussed on the show, it's pretty easy. Just visit fitstairs.com or their excellent new app. Fitstairs offer a telephone and text betting service as well. If you want to give them a call, you can get prices on pretty much any market and special bets. 0207 851 5407 is the number to call. You can text the office as well on 07492 882 213. If you quote Boodles, you'd also get a cheeky little price boost. Max one price boost per person, though. It must be at odds of evens or greater. You have to be over 18. Please bet responsibly. Okay, let's head to World of Sport now. This week we thought it might be fun to talk around some of the upcoming events in sport with some fourfold hackers that we've each drawn up. I think this is a good idea. Let's kick it. I'll kick it off if you don't mind.
Yeah, yeah.
So look, you can disagree. You can debate my choices here. But first of all, Club World Cup. I know that you're a huge Chelsea fan, and I know you're excited about getting that badge on the shirt next season for Chelsea. But surely this is PSG's competition to win. Now, at the time of recording, you know, they get to play Real Madrid, a dangerous semi-final. But if they get through that, Surely they beat Chelsea in the final, and you can back PSG at the moment at 6-4. For the women's Euros, going against the grain, I'm going with France at 5-1. I'll explain why shortly. Boxing next weekend at Wembley Stadium, great fight this. Daniel Dubois gets another go at beating Alexander Usyk. Controversial loss previously, where he actually did knock down Usyk, but it was classed as a low blow. I'm backing Dubois to beat Usyk by KO at 9-2. And the World Match Play Darts starts in Blackpool at the Winter Gardens next Saturday. And I'm going to go with Luke Littler at 13-8 for that. He was knocked out in the first round last year, but he's pretty much won everything else already. And I think he's more than good enough to win there. So my acca comes to 233.6-1. What are you saying?
That'd be all right, wouldn't it? Yeah, that wouldn't be too bad. Let's try and pick some of these apart then. PSG, I mean, seems the obvious one, doesn't it, really?
It's fair.
Good game tonight, though. It will be a really good game tonight, because you know that Real Madrid are not, they're not approaching that thinking they're outsiders. Do you know what I mean? I think they're, what, 15
well,
to 8?
It's the final, isn't it, Lola? Really?
Wow. We'll wait and see, won't we? We'll wait and see.
I think there's a few question marks for me about the Real Madrid defence, yeah. Particularly a guy that plays on that plays at right back. I mean, you've got Barcola and Doué and Kvaratskhelia. They're probably the three best one-on-one dribblers in the world, and that is his glaring weakness. And I say that as someone who's watched him week in, week out for the last 7 years.
Had to just
Jeremy
make,
Doku would have something to say about that.
Make it about Trent, didn't we? And just then, had to somehow then, make it about Trent.
And then they've got Huijsen is suspended, so yes. Raul Asensio is coming in, and he's just a walking penalty, isn't he? He's literally got red card penalty written all over him. So
yeah, I know what you're saying.
I think that it could actually be quite one-sided.
All right, so you agree with me on that. Is there anything you disagree with?
I'm surprised that you've gone with France, because Spain have looked pretty imperious, haven't they, so far at the women's Euros? So what's the...
Well, Spain are very short.
Yeah, 5-6, yeah.
Yeah, they're very, very short at this stage. They do look the best team, but what I would say is, have they played anyone good yet? They did flounder at the Olympics. There is issues with the coach again, I think, in terms of, you know, the tactical approach. They have great players. They have great forwards. But I think there are flaws there, and especially defensively. And what I saw from France... is a team that are quick, really rapid. They are athletic and powerful. And when they come at you hard and fast. And England struggled to handle it. And I think Spain, if they do clash, whether that's at the semi-final or the final stage, I think they might struggle to handle it as well, especially if France, as expected, would play on the counter-attack. I give, at 5-1, I give them an absolute chance at this. And there are another couple of stats here. They've won 10 matches in a row, which is not to be sniffed at. And they've scored at least twice in 9 of those 10 internationals. They score goals.
I don't think they've ever won a major tournament, though.
No, they haven't. They normally bottle it.
If they were to top England's group, would they meet Spain in the semis? Yeah, okay.
I struggle to see past Spain. The quality of their players, problems with the coach aside and the setup, they have the best player in the world, arguably, Mateus. And the things that they can do, those players, is a level above any of the other teams. I think, I can't remember who said it, but someone said a few weeks ago, what's going to happen is all the teams are going to play, we're going to have a quarterfinal, we're going to have a semi-final, and then Spain are going to win the Euros. I think sometimes football is simple, Clarky.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's why they're the favourites. But I believe at 5-1 that's reasonable value on France. Little, I don't think needs much explanation, but the Dubois to beat Usyk, most people would not expect that to happen. Usyk's never been beaten, of course. But what I would say here, and I always think about this when I'm looking at the odds, he's 23-10 to win, is Daniel Dubois, which is a relatively short price.
Yeah,
but he's 9-2 to win by KO.
Yeah,
and of his 22 his 22 wins, he won 21 by KO.
If he's going to win, it's going to be a big
KO. So I think sometimes when you're looking at sports betting, even if you think it's something's unlikely to happen, there is value to be had, and there's something to be said for going down that route. Usyk is getting older.
Yeah.
And Dubois proved he could hurt him in the last fight. And I thought that Fury had him at points. Not really, but I thought he had him a little bit rattled at moments of those two fights. So yeah, I think at 9-2 Dubois has a chance on home soil to cause what would be a massive upset.
I like the rationale behind that.
Very
good.
Sensible.
Right, yeah. 233-1 then. PSG to win the Club World Cup, France to win the Women's Euros, Dubois to knock out Usyk, and Luke Littler to win the World Match Play Darts at Blackpool. Lola, what do you got for us?
I think when you start throwing things into an acca, you very quickly see the odds start to lengthen and lengthen.
In your case, we absolutely
so
do.
So I'm clocking in a whopping 1,422 to 1.
I'm loving that.
But yeah, I think, you know, that's the name of the game when you're doing a fourfold, is to keep things interesting.
I'll have a pound on that.
So starting with the golf, the Open, I'm going for Shane Lowry at 22-1. And my rationale here is that at the top of the market, there's not a lot of certainty around your Scheffler's, your McIlroy's, even John Rahm, Schoeffler. I think Schoeffler won the Open last year, didn't he?
Xander Schoeffler went last year.
It wasn't here. I think when you look at these golf tournaments, you know I had my moment in the sun picking Rory for the Masters, but there's so many different ways that things can pan out. It is a bit of a lottery, so I can't go too short here. Yeah. Shane Lowry won this the last time it was at Portrush.
I think what you're saying there, I agree with, in the sense that with McIlroy and Scheffler being, what, they 4-1 and 15-2.
It feels really short.
They're just taking up such a chunk of the market. There is some value to be had elsewhere, particularly in the each way market. And for the open, it says we'll be paying 8 places.
Just the 8?
Yeah, just the 8. at a fifth of the odds, so good to know. But I think my record putting golfers up on this podcast, I don't think I've had one make the cut yet. So maybe I'm not the best person to say. But I think I like the angle, Lola, in the sense that those two are taking up a huge chunk of the market.
Yeah.
So
yeah, he missed the cut at the US Open and the USPGA.
I think I actually might have backed him at the US Open.
Tied 42nd at the Masters. Yeah. He did come second, didn't he, in early May at the Truist. So and look, home soil, like you say.
He went back to visit a few weeks ago. If you go back through his Twitter, he went back to visit. He saw the mural of him. And, you know, I believe a lot in sports psychology. Yeah, yeah. I think he's just getting himself right for a big charge.
Like it.
So yeah, I'm going Shane Lowry at the Open.
Okay.
And then Wimbledon. It's really hard to see any weakness with Alcaraz. And this isn't born out of necessarily thinking like I've seen things about his game that make me worry about him. But looking at Djokovic, we've hypothesized that, you know, this is the one he wants the most. You know, this is his best chance. His best chance of beating Sinner or Alcaraz is always going to be on grass.
Yeah.
He's just, we've talked about his body language also in other tournaments and not being quite right. He's so on it here.
Yeah.
He's so on
it. He's become more likable all of a sudden now that he's not the heavy favourite.
We talked to John about this last week.
Yeah. Golden oldie.
Yeah. He's gone like full circle.
And his kids are his big cheerleader in the box. I do like that.
He looks happy. He looks relaxed. And the funny thing is, we were watching it in the office. I don't know if we should admit that on the radio. But when he lost that first set, it wasn't in doubt, in a way. He lost the first set against de Menor, and you're just like, he's
even
coming back.
4-1 down in the fourth, he wins the set.
So you're backing Djokovic?
I'm backing Djokovic, especially because there's concerns about injury with Sinner.
Yeah.
And I think if he did get to the final, which I think he's got a good chance of doing given Sinner's injury concerns, when he gets within sniffing distance of these slams, he's really hard to stop.
Look at Grumis on Henry's face.
I'm not sure. I really like to see it. I do like Djokovic. I've been saying for many years in the Fitzstairs office that he's definitely the most underrated of the big three.
He's not the GOAT, though, is he? Roger Federer is the GOAT.
Who's won the most Grand Slams, Larky?
Henry's in the Nadal camp.
It's not. Nadal was my favourite player, but Djokovic has won the most Grand Slams, and Djokovic has played the best tennis that's ever been played, in my view. So it'd be great to see him win another one. I don't want to kind of give away. One of my selections comes to Wimbledon, so I'll wait for...
I wonder who it is.
I'll wait.
I'll tell you what, though. So obviously he's won two Wimbledon finals, hasn't he, Alcaraz, against Djokovic. Yeah. The last one was really easy as well, straight sets. So I get where you're coming from, Henry. But Djokovic has beaten Alcaraz in 4 of their last 5 meetings. Mm.
Isn't it? This is the last chance. This is the last chance he will have.
Okay.
And you just, you know, with Novak, I think he was winning and winning and winning. It's like you can drill down into the motivation a bit and be like, yeah, the young guys, they're more hungry, you know, when the going gets tough. But this is literally his last chance.
I think he's going to need Sinner to be... Obviously, Sinner's got some questions around his elbow. He played Sinner in the semis,
hasn't
he?
Went for an MRI yesterday.
Yeah, he did.
I backed Sinner after the first round because I just thought he was playing so well.
He's going to need Sinner to be slightly off it. I mean, he was terrible against Dimitrov, to be fair, wasn't he? But I think if he's struggling with an injury, Djokovic obviously has a great chance. But if they both play well, he can't beat Sinner.
I don't think Sinner's never beaten Djokovic at Wimbledon. Just one more thing I wanted to say was Alcaraz was taken to 5 sets by Fanini. So, you know, he's gettable
just
at.
Just getting loose. Don't worry about that. He's just playing himself in.
You reckon? I know that you're going for PSG as well, which we've covered. So what's your fourth leg?
So my fourth leg is in the July Cup on Saturday. The general state of British sprinting is not great. So this is a bit, this race has really been kind of given more prestige and interest by notable speech, 2000 Guineas winner last season being supplemented. But that kind of is a sign of the times in terms of British sprinting. So I don't feel particularly confident about anything towards the top of the market.
Yeah.
So I'm going for Flora of Bermuda, third in the Jubilee at Ascot, probably the standout on form. And as I said, I don't really like the favourite here, Notable Speech. Interestingly, the Race IQ database has logged all 8 of Notable Speech's races in Britain, and he's never run faster than 41.72 miles an hour.
Sounds quite quick to me.
Yeah, it's quick.
Can you get it up to 41.7?
but the July course at Newmarket is quick, you know, quicker than that. That was at Kempton, so it actually wasn't on grass. I don't know, it's first time at 6 furlongs, isn't it, Henry? He'd have to become the first 2000 Guineas winner in over a century.
So it's dropping back in distance. It's a sprint, yeah, more than middle distance.
I just can't see it. So for me, again, it was a little bit like with the golf. I don't like the options available at the top of the market, so I'm looking for a bit of value.
Yeah.
Value, okay. Hunter.
So 1,422 to 1. Flora of Bermuda, PSG to win the Club World Cup, Djokovic to make history by winning Wimbledon, and Shane Lowry to effectively defend his Open at Portrush title that he won. Was it 2019?
In the range. Remember, it was terrible conditions that year. Yeah, it was horrible.
I do like Shane Lowry. He'd be a very popular winner, wouldn't he?
I'm not saying put your mortgage on it, but, you know,
1,422 to 1. I'm interested.
Pay for the mortgage.
Let's hear yours then, Henry.
So we'll start off with the Open, and I'm going for Jon Rahm. I know, Lola, you weren't massively keen on him, but I just feel like in the majors this season, he is peaking. Yeah. And he's obviously gone to live. He's earned an awful lot of money. And I think all he actually cares about now is the majors.
Yeah.
So I think he's playing in Andalusia this week, isn't he? Which is a home event for him on the LIV Tour. But fundamentally, he'll want to win there. But
it's not great prep for the Open, though, is it?
It's not, but it's not as though he's a young, you know, young up-and-comer. He's played enough links golf and, he's got a bit of form over course and distance here. He finished 11th in 2019. He had the rough end of the draw there too, because I remember it was howling in the afternoon on the Thursday.
He's won a couple of Irish Opens as well, hasn't
he? So, yeah, he's a good links golf player. And like I say, I just think in the majors, he's turning up now. I mean, he's finished 14th at the Masters. He was 8th at the PGA, 7th at the US Open. Just feel like he's trending in the right direction. And I don't really like either of the top two at the prices. I mean, it's impossible not to like Scottie Scheffler, obviously, but at the... And McIlroy.
I like this shout, I've got to say. I'm not going to argue against it.
Just feel like you're getting double figures and you're not about DeChambeau. But
the point you made about being on the LIV Tour, I think it took some adjusting to for him at the start. It's like, I'm out of the loop here. What's going on?
Yeah.
He's now got his head around it. And it's really about sort of just tuning himself up for the big events. And it's showing that it's working. He has also finished in the top 10. In 3 of the last 4 Open Championships.
Yeah, this is what I mean. He's a very good link golf player. He can control his ball flight so much better than a lot of these guys. So yeah.
What else you got?
Wimbledon men's singles. I just find it impossible to look past the favourite here, Alcaraz.
Boring.
Yeah, fair enough, but pays the bills.
Four to six, though.
The only thing that is slightly worrying me about this price is if Sinner plays Shelton later, doesn't he? If he comes out and is visibly absolutely fine and the elbow is not causing him any trouble, then that price is not going to be 4 to 6. It's going to be bigger, obviously, because I suspect that will be the case. I just think, though, my view is that Sinner is injured. I think there were a few comments yesterday that he didn't practice in public anyway, which wouldn't fill you with that much confidence. And yeah, if Alcaraz plays Djokovic in the final, I know you've obviously said he's got a good record against him in their last 5 meetings, but the way that he put him away in that Wimbledon final last year is just lives long in the memory for me.
Yeah, years a long time ago, though.
I know it was a different surface, obviously the Olympics, but I think that's quite an interesting one when you look at Novak from a motivation standpoint, because that was missing from his collection, and that was something that he really, really wanted.
Yeah.
And obviously Alcaraz had beaten him at Roland Garros just a few months before, so I just don't know if you can apply... You can't apply cold, hard logic to Djokovic at Wimbledon. It just doesn't, you know, we don't know.
A couple of years ago, he was favoured to beat Alcaraz, wasn't he, in the final? Lost in 5, and that was an absolute thriller. But last year, it just wasn't even, you know, it wasn't even remotely close. The one thing that I would say is interesting, too, if Alcaraz does play Sinner, is Alcaraz has actually beaten Sinner their last 5 times. Yeah. Got his number at the moment.
Okay.
But Sinner, the only time they met at Wimbledon was in the 4th round in 2022, and Sinner actually beat him. That's the only time they played on grass, so... We've seen them sort of take chunks out of each other on every other surface. It would be very good to see those two go head to head.
I think Sinner's brilliant, I've got to say. And it was really interesting to hear John Invidel last week's tip up Sinner to out major Alcaraz. That, I thought that was a really good line from John.
Yeah.
So, yeah, look, it's going to be a fascinating last few days. July Cup?
Yeah, July Cup. I'm actually going in completely the opposite direction to Lola here. Lola said she didn't think much of the standard of British sprinters. I think the British sprinters are terrible. I'd actually go a step further. They are poor.
Why are they so bad then?
I don't really know.
It's because we're not breeding for speed.
Yeah, everyone wants a mile plus horse, don't they? A 10 furlong horse, I think.
So it's more valuable to
further down the line. But Yeah, I mean, look at the Jubilee Stakes. I mean, you said Froyal Bermuda finished third, but the two horses in front were Lazat, who was Adam Mills' nap when he came on for the Royal Ascot Special, and the Japanese horse. They were miles clear. And then it was American Affair won the 5 furlong King Charles III Stakes. He's a glorified handicapper winning a Group 1 race at Royal Ascot. So if I'm correct and the sprinters are this poor, then this just surely paves the way for a notable speech coming back in trip. 7-2 brings proper Group 1 form to the table. If you watch his last two races in the Queen Anne and the Lock-in Stakes, he travels all over them and then just doesn't really get home. So I think the drop-in trip actually might suit him a little bit.
He's not bred for it, though.
Not sure he's been seeing his race. I don't think, though, you have to be a typical sort of sprinter to win this. I think he will, yeah.
I like your logic, but I spoke to, I think it was 4 people I polled in the office, and these guys are these guys know what they're talking about. Yeah. Henry, you know they know what they're talking about. And 4 people, I said, who's going to win the July Cup? 4 people came back and said, not notable speech. They said, don't know who's going to win, but it's not going to be notable speech.
That's fine. This is what the game's about, isn't it? Opinions.
We'll find out, won't we? Who's winning the club?
Final leg. I couldn't help myself. Could not help myself. The only team that have currently qualified for the final is obviously Chelsea. If they're 13-8, look, if they play PSG or Real Madrid in the final, you've either got the champions of Europe or you've got historically best team in the world over the past however many years. We're going to be outsiders in that final. I just think if you are looking to cling on to something as Chelsea fans, got an extra day's rest, which means a lot in these conditions. That big squad that everyone tells me about that Enzo Maresca's got, he's been able to sort of
I think 27 players he's given minutes
juggle
to
juggle the pack. Yeah, Joao Pedro, I mean, yesterday it looks like we've actually,
you didn't fancy him, did you?
He looks like he looks a player. Be slightly worried about Nicholas Jackson's future, maybe, given that, and obviously Delap's come in. There is one caveat, though.
Yeah,
Moises Caicedo went off with an injury yesterday. He seems to think it's not too bad. But yeah, I mean, he's so important, obviously, to have Chelsea players.
Who does Chelsea want to play in the final?
This is a question I was going to ask you guys, actually. Who would you rather play?
Yeah, you won't beat PSG, but you might be able to beat Real Madrid.
PSG lost to Botafogo, didn't they? So have they got a clang around?
Yeah, you're not going to... Chelsea can't do... They can't park the bus, can they? That's not how they play. It's not how Maresca likes to play.
No. I don't know, yeah. I think... And also, aside from everything else, Chelsea have actually played quite well, I think. I mean, we've obviously been on the nice side of the draw. Same side of the draw as Man City were, by the way.
Who have you beaten to get to this stage?
Lotus tip, Man City were in
being on the nice
draw.
Side of the draw is putting it lightly, isn't it? Let's be honest there, Henry. They have had a ridiculously easy pathway to the final. And the reason, Lola, that Inter Maresca doesn't like to soak up pressure is because he doesn't have a good enough defence or a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
So if you put that back line under pressure, he doesn't really have a settled back line. Individually, I would have question marks over most of the players as well. That's why he wants to take control of games. The funny thing is, at the Club World Cup, Chelsea have scored 5 goals on the break.
Yeah.
They're brilliant on the break.
Yeah. There's
If Chelsea improve their defence, they could be a brilliant counter-attacking side.
I think against PSG, it could get quite end-to-end and could get a bit unsavoury, potentially. But with Real Madrid, it's going to be... Look, I also do think it's a one-off game. You know, in a one-off game, anything can happen, and can't get away from Chelsea, obviously.
But with,
in this
with
final.
Chelsea, you know, you talk about the big squad, which, you know, is an argument that you're using to suit you under these circumstances. But, you know, you look at Mudryk, what did you spend on him? 88 million?
He's
gone. Noni Madueke, off to Arsenal. Nkunku, where is he?
Flip Noni Madueke for a profit.
Yeah, what's going on in Noni Madueke's head?
Chelsea do win things, Lola. They do. Even though you can disagree with a lot of what they do win stuff.
What are Chelsea doing in the Club World Cup? Well, we won the Champions League in 2021. So.
Yeah. Right, your Aka, 235-1. Wish you the best of luck.
You're going to need it.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Fitzdes World of Sport is proud to be sponsored by Boodles, the only fine jewellery brand who loves sport just as much as you do. Boodles are great champions of British sport, so ideal partners for us on Fitzdes World of Sport. Boodles have got fantastic stores in Leeds, Manchester, Chester and Dublin, as well as in London at 178 Bond Street. Check those stores out if you're in the area, or you can have a look at the website. Loads of great jewellery there. It's boodles.com. It's time to play three tenors. Every week at the end of the pod, we get a tenor from Fitzdes to place on an upcoming event. This is fast becoming my personal favourite section. I'm Smuggy Merc Smugface this week. Thanks to Delacroix winning the Coral Eclipse. Great race. I bagged him at 6-1 before Ryan Moore selected to ride him. He went down to 3-1 and it was a brilliant race. And yeah, as I was doing the ironing in the kitchen watching that race, I was cock-a-hoop, let me tell you. So the table now reads £243 profit to me, Lola £77.70, and dear old Henry, 22.
Me and Henry haven't 50. Moved for a few weeks, have we?
No. What have we got this week?
So this feels a bit mean. I've been made out to look like I'm really not a supporter of England cricket. And it's not because I don't want to see him do well. Yeah. But I almost want to shake Brendan McCullum and say you're making the wrong decision with Zach Crawley. So yeah, I actually think Zach Crawley under 23.5 runs in the first innings is pretty close to guaranteed at 5-6. I could be made to look very foolish, but I can't see any reason. Why would his form turn around dramatically? These two tests are really tight, and Lords is going to be a tougher wicket than Edgbaston.
It's
and
a topical pick.
Bumrah's back. So,
and Akash Deep looked great, didn't he? So, yeah, no, look, I get that. I wonder what line Gill is set at on that unders and overs. It must be about like 60 or something. Yeah. What have you got then for us, Henry? Come on, this is the one for you.
Well, I said earlier, I really need to stop putting golfers up on this podcast, but in a sort of sadistic way, I'm doing it again. Going to the Scottish Open, brilliant warm-up event for the Open, obviously. I think last year's winner, Bob McIntyre, might just go back-to-back. So I'm going to have a 5 each way on him at 25-1.
How far do we go down for each way?
We're only playing 5 places here, not the 8 you get in the majors. I know, yeah. You have to get on to the traders, Clarkie. Like I say, defending champion. He finished 2nd 2 years ago to McIlroy. You remember McIlroy hitting that 2-iron into the wind here on 18 to about 4 foot. And obviously won here last year. This is National Open, whilst I think quite a few of the market principals are here for a warm-up. You know, they've not played a lot of links golf. They're over here to try and get ready for next week. Whereas for him, you know, this is Gold Cup. This is his cup final. I think he'll be really, really hungry for this. And yeah, he obviously suits his play pretty well. Brilliant short game, which obviously is ideal for around here, the Renaissance Club, because the greens are really, really tricky. So yeah, hopefully I can have a runner on a Saturday at least. yeah, we'll see.
Something to cheer.
Fingers crossed. It's a big night of women's boxing stateside. I don't know if you caught these the first two fights between Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano. They were absolutely brilliant. Proper slugfests. You know, two goats of women's boxing. Katie Taylor is 2-0 up, won both of the previous bouts on points. Narrowly, it has to be said. They've both been out of action since November last year, so it's quite a long break. But I'm going to back Katie Taylor, who's the outsider, to make it 3 in a row by winning on points. So that's 9-5 or 2.8 in decimals for Katie Taylor to beat Serrano on points for a third consecutive time. Whatever happens, if you like your boxing, this isn't about that you'd want to miss. Right, that's all we've got time for on Fitzdes World of Sport. Thank you for listening. If you like the show, do let someone know. Best ways are to give us a nice review, to tell a friend, Lots of you on YouTube have been watching, which is absolutely fantastic. So please do keep on listening and watching the show. It's great to have you all on board. If you want to find out more about Fitstairs or any offers you've heard here, just visit fitstairs.com. Prices you've heard here are subject to change, though. It's 18 plus only. Please gamble responsibly. Right, enjoy your weekend of sport. I can't wait to see. What if one of us lands one of those accas? That's going to be.
Yeah, it's going to be. I won't be here if I land my accas.
I'm going to have to back it. I'm going to back all of them. Probably a very small wager. Just
pound on each one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a fun one to follow, isn't it? That was Fitstairs World of Sport. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Adrian Clark. Your producer was Simon Watts. In the studio today, we had the brilliant Henry Beasley and Lola Katz Roberts. Fitstairs World of Sport is a Track Record production. And we'll see you soon. Thanks for listening.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.